I'm Robin. Welcome to East Lake. We're a church for everyone. Welcome if you're watching online, because it seems like everybody's trying to figure out God in some way. Now, today's Easter, so a great day for family and food and friends. And, you know, you got the little kids with the Easter egg hunt, and most of the dudes have stashed the eggs, the good ones, somewhere where they'll find them later. And, you know, you have the Easter baskets and chocolate eggs and chocolate bunnies. And we know that Jesus is somehow connected to all of it, but how is he connected? How is it? And Easter is a celebration of a very specific event. It's not the celebration of the Christian church. And it's not the celebration of anything that Jesus said or did. It's not the celebration of Christianity. It's the celebration of a very specific event, the resurrection of Jesus. Now, when Jesus came from heaven, people were wondering about God then too. The church, the dominant church, the Jewish church, had become very judgmental and unaccepting. It made it awfully hard for people to feel like God loved them. They felt very far from God. So a lot of people just stopped going to church. But they didn't stop wondering about God. And then Jesus shows up, and he has this entirely different thing that he's saying. He's saying it's not about trying to get to God. It's about understanding that God is trying to get to you. In fact, he makes this outrageous statement. He says that he's God. He's come from heaven. He's like he's trying to be with us. And one time he said, you know, if you want to see God, take a look at me, because if you see me, you see him. And of course, this would have created a lot of commotion, especially in his family. I mean, Jesus had like a mom and a dad and brothers and sisters. So imagine someone comes up to Jesus, his sister, and says, hey, you know, I was hanging out with your brother Jesus last night. Told me he was God. And she's like, oh, there he goes again. I told him not to do that. It's embarrassing. You know, and we've all embarrassed our family somehow. And that's Jesus. Yet as they watched him live, and as they listened to what he said, and as they saw how he treated people and how he loved people, they wondered, could that be God? Has God come down from heaven? Is he here now? And you might think, well, what does that have to do with the resurrection? Well, here's what happened. I mean, pretty soon, hundreds and then thousands of people, they start to follow Jesus. And right in the middle of the entire thing, he dies. Or rather, he's killed. The powers of the day, they decide, the religious leaders in the Roman government who rules the whole world, they decide Jesus is a threat. Like a modern day, maybe like Martin Luther King. I mean, Jesus is saying amazing things, and these people have changes happening in their lives, and the religious leaders just decide we're stopping the movement, we're killing him. And that's the famous story of the crucifixion, of Jesus dying on the cross. And today I just want to take a look at this one thing. What does the resurrection mean? And the first thing is found in the crucifixion. It's the big idea this weekend. Look in your notes. Everyone is included. Let me read something to you. Then Jesus shouted out again, and he released his spirit. And we know what he shouted out from someone else's writing. He shouted out, it's finished. He just said those words. He said, it's finished. Which would have been odd, because normally when someone was crucified, it took like 2 or 3 days for it to be finished. And Jesus was on the cross. I'm sure it seemed like a long time to him, but it was only 6 hours. Which would have infuriated the religious leaders. Because when you crucified someone, the whole idea was to make a public example of them. And so they're hoping that Jesus is up there for a long, long time, you know, and nobody else better tell people the things that he was saying. And then in 6 hours, it's done. It's finished. And of course, they thought that they could determine when Jesus was done. When's the last time someone did that to you? They thought they had enough control in your life to decide when you were done. This conversation is finished. They march off to the bedroom. You're not spending any more money. Give me that debit card. You're done. I'm sorry, but we've had way, way, way too many orders not go through. We have to lay off some people, and you're finished here. You don't get to come and visit the kids next weekend. That's not your normal time that you get to do visitation. When is the last someone said to you, you're done? They think they have enough control and they get to tell you when you're done. Be careful. Be careful with people that tell you when you're finished and when you're done. They think they can control Jesus' life, and he's in control of this whole thing. He's going to decide when he's done, and you should too. You decide when you're finished. Because he's planning a moment. Jesus is planning, I'll be finished, and when I'm done, it will create a moment that will change everything. Listen, I'll read it to you. At that moment, the curtain in the sanctuary of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, rocks split apart, and tombs opened. The bodies of many godly men and women who had died were raised from the dead. They left the cemetery after Jesus' resurrection, went into the holy city of Jerusalem, and appeared to many people. Can you imagine? Now, a lot of people, they think about the resurrection and think, oh, that's just a make-believe story or it's a big fat lie. I mean, can you imagine if this was a lie? I mean, who would make up a lie like this? This would be like a kindergartner would have to make up a lie like this. I mean, if you were going to tell a lie, you'd tell a lie that would sort of be believable. It wouldn't include the revenge of the zombies. I mean, dead people walking around. If your great-grandfather, who was like really godly, came and knocked on your door and you opened up the door, I think word would get around. I mean, if you're going to tell a lie, how could this be a lie? You couldn't stage this. You couldn't make it up. You couldn't try to slip it by people. How could this be a lie? How could any of it happen? I mean, or maybe it's true. Maybe it actually did occur. Now, in Jesus' day, this wind-dominant church where everybody seemed to go, your mom, your dad went there, your brother, your sister, your friends, and then there was the people that didn't go there, the Jewish church, they had this temple, and in Jerusalem, the temple was like the center of the entire city. Everything revolved around this temple, and the temple had three different parts. It had the outer court at the temple, and that's where the common people went. So just the average, everyday Joe bag of donut people, they went out there. And then you had the holy place, and that's where the people that were high up in the church, they got to go there. And then you had the most holy place, and that's where God went. Nobody went there. Like one time a year, somebody high up in the church would go in there and they'd ask God to forgive everybody's sins, but other than that, no, nobody got to God. And there was this big curtain that ran across it, very high and very long and thick, and it told everybody it's not easy to get to God. Now, in the church, they had capitalized on this, and here's what they had done. They had sort of divided people into groups. You had your good group and your bad group, and if the church liked you, you were in the good group, and if the church didn't like you, you were in the bad group. And everybody was separated by this curtain, felt a long ways from God, and I have curtains in my life. I have things that I've done in my past that I'm ashamed of. And still, after all these years, I'll think back on it, and just the feelings of guilt come back again. And it's like a curtain just comes down between me and God. It's just there now. And I feel so far away from him for something I did such a long time ago. Isn't it true that you can have done something so long ago, and then somehow when the memory comes back, it's like all the crap comes back with it. You're like, man, that was like 15 years ago. And so your soul says, I don't care. And you feel ashamed. It's like a curtain. And then you feel far from God. What's your curtain? You're doing pretty good, and then all of a sudden it just seems like it comes slamming down. In the church, they emphasize the curtain in Jesus' day. It's hard to get to God. You have to work super, super hard for God to even like you, let alone love you. And when he died on the cross, in just a moment he said, it's finished. That's done now. And imagine, it goes from the very top to the bottom, so the entire thing slices. And the imagery is everyone's included. It doesn't just slice down to about this high and small people walk up and go, oh, I'm left out. All the way. Anyone can go through. Here's what it means. It means I'm not separated from God anymore because of my unholiness. Now I'm invited to be with him in his holiness. When Jesus said, it's finished. Everyone is included. And so it's an amazing death. It's an amazing moment. But in that time when Jesus died, it seemed like it was going to be like any other death. I mean, people weren't waiting around for the resurrection. I mean, when somebody dies, I mean, this is what I do, and they did the same thing. I did the same thing they would have done. You pay your respect to the dead, and then you try to move on. They weren't waiting around for Jesus to be resurrected. There wasn't a big, huge crowd at the tomb on this day, Easter Sunday. Hundreds and thousands of people waiting around. You know, they got the confetti and the horns. People are selling hot dogs. Hey, welcome to the resurrection. You know, get ready. 10, 9, 8. You know, they're all, yeah. They all actually went home. His friends went home. His followers went home. Even his family went home. He's dead now. And you can see the problem, because they were counting on their relationship with Jesus to change their life. They weren't counting on the things that he taught. I mean, I always know what I should do. The problem is I can't do it. I know I should pay off my debt. I know I should exercise more regularly. I know exactly who I should apologize to. I know who I need to forgive. I know who I need to like better at work, which I probably won't. And I mean, I just know that stuff about myself. I know my life. That's not the problem, knowing. The problem is I can't do it. So they're like, well, Jesus taught us. I mean, we know what to do. Like, forgive your enemies without him. So you can see the situation they're in. What's going on in your life right now, and you know what you're supposed to do, but you can't get any traction. You can even sort of look ahead and go, man, if I was able to do this, it would be so sweet to be out of debt because I could just get back in debt for that 4x truck I want. You know what to do. And here's what happened. They all got together, and they had sort of like a now what meeting. What do we do now? And that's when Jesus reappeared. There had been a rumor going around that he was risen. They couldn't find him in the tomb. They searched and looked, and there was all kinds of stories going around. Oh, they hit him, or someone came and got him. But they couldn't find the body, so they were like, and they had this meeting. Listen how he appears to them. Look in your notes. That Sunday evening, the disciples were meeting behind locked doors because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders. Suddenly, circle that. Jesus was standing there among them. Peace be with you, he said. As he spoke, he showed them the wounds in his hands and his side. They were filled with joy when they saw the Lord. Suddenly. Jesus can turn hopelessness into hope so fast. One minute they're thinking, what are we going to do now? And the next minute Jesus is saying, chill out. Well, he didn't probably say that, but he's like, settle down. I'm going to be with you. My way is not about rules and regulations. It's not about principles and laws that govern your life. I know you know that you cannot do that. I'm here. And here's the great thing. And we'll do it together. You know why the resurrection matters? Because he's alive. And if he's alive, I have hope. Listen to how they say it here. In his great mercy, he has given us a new birth and a hope that is alive. It's alive because Jesus Christ rose from the dead. And here's the hope. Number one, my past can be forgiven. Jesus says this to a paralyzed man in a story. When Jesus saw their faith, he said, friend, your sins are forgiven. This is a miracle story. Now, over the next 4 weeks, every single week on the weekend, I'm going to teach on a miracle story that Jesus did and see how that miracle can change our life too. So for the next 4 weeks, every week a miracle story. Next week, I'm going to talk about this big story. But here's what happened here. There's a paralyzed man, and he has five friends. They all grew up together. You know, five guys on the baseball team, or maybe five guys always down at the swimming hole, or maybe five guys who open up a string of burger places or something. Anyways, five guys, right? Yeah, okay. And so anyway, I just slide that in. So anyway, the five guys, right? And so they know Jesus is coming to town, right? And any time that Jesus would be on his way to town, the word would get out. It'd be like, the magic show is coming. You know, Jesus is coming. It's going to be awesome, you know, and they'd heard about all the miracles. And so, like, the word would get around, and they hear about it, and they have this friend. And nobody, I don't know what's occurred. He's maybe born this way, or he got hurt. Whatever it is, though, he's really stuck. When you know a friend that's really stuck, How do you respond? And these five guys, they think the magic show's coming to town. Jesus, well, let's give it a shot. So they, like, it's like a comedy skit. Like, they tape this guy, duct tape him to a stretcher, and they head off to try to find Jesus, and they've got him, right, and they're going. And Jesus is at a big, large house, and there's so many people there, they're spilling out of the house. There's hundreds of people all around this house, and as they come up on the stretcher, they're like, dang, man, how are we going to get him close? And you know how people are to crowd when you try to get through? And I went to a jazz game the other night, the big crowd, you say, excuse me, let me through. Somebody's like, get back, man, this is my spot. We got a guy on a stretcher. Yeah, good for you. You know, I got sore feet. Get back. You know, they won't let him through. So, and here's what happens. One of the friends gets a plan, an idea. Do you have a friend? And anytime that friend says, I have an idea, you go, oh. Primo Benigni in high school was the friend like that for me. Anytime Primo Benigni said, I have a plan, I was like, and I have some other place to be. And their plan is, they see this staircase going up on this house. This house was built with a big flat roof. And they notice the staircase, you can get to the staircase. And so they get like a bunch of digging tools and ropes, and they somehow get this guy on the stretcher up onto the roof, and they start digging through the roof. They bust an entire, I mean, right now, the big hole through this thing. And then here comes this stretcher being lowered down on ropes. And I'm sure Jesus, who was talking, is, what in the heck is going on the roof? And then here comes the stretcher down. He's probably just watching the stretcher come down a little bit further and further and further. Imagine the paralyzed guy. He's on the stretcher. He can't move. And he comes right down in front of Jesus. He's probably like, what's up? And Jesus says to him, your sins are forgiven. Now, if I'm one of those friends on top of that roof, I'm like, what? Fix his legs, man. Are you crazy? I don't need some fortune cookie little religious slogan. His sins are forgiven. We didn't dig through this roof. I got to pay for this roof, man. Fix his legs. That's the type of thing that that's the change that he needs. And here's the cool thing about Jesus. He can always see beyond the obvious. And he always knows the change that I actually need the most. He always knows that if you're going to fix the outside, you usually have to start with the inside. Because we're good at the outside. We fix our life up and our houses and our hair, and not the guys, but the girls. You get it colored, you never go gray or white. Your hair is just always colored. And you know, you look good on the outside and everything's great and your life looks perfect, but on the you can do whatever you want to the outside, but your inside. What type of things have you tried in your life? You've done all kinds of things on the outside. And it hasn't worked to fix the inside. What do you need to be forgiven of? You have tried a lot of things on the outside. I would have been one of the ones yelling, fix his legs! But in the story, the paralyzed man, he doesn't say anything because he knows the thing that matters most in my life is to be forgiven of my past. Jesus does fix his legs later, and I'll tell you all about it, but in this instant, he says, your sins are forgiven. Do you need to hear that today? See, the resurrection matters because Jesus is alive, and if he's alive, he can say to you, your sins are forgiven. And look at the second thing in your notes. Turn it over. My problems can be solved. Jesus says this to a blind man named Bartimaeus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Rabbi, which means teacher in Jewish, I want to see. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. Circle that. So here's this blind man, and this blind man has a problem that he can't solve. He's a blind man that has a problem that he can't solve, and it won't go away. And whenever I get there, there's two places I always go, and here's the first one. The problem won't go away. I can't solve it. I always think this. There's something wrong with me. There's something I did in my past, and now I'm paying for it. I'm being penalized because I have a past. Or if I was just a better person, a better husband, better father. The kids grow up, and you look back, and you just shake your head, and you go, I deserve everything I get that's bad. Because there's so many things you wish you'd do better. And the first place I always go when I have a problem that I can't solve and it won't go away is what's wrong with me? I'm always going to have this problem because of me. Where do you get down on yourself in your life? You're so certain that the problem that you're going through is because of you. Are you like me that way? Now here's the other one. What's wrong with you, God? I thought you said you loved me. Don't you see what I'm going through? Don't you care about me? How long are you going to leave me this way? I mean, go one place or the other. And Jesus does heal his sight, and I'm sure that changed his life. But what if in this story, the greatest change was not that this blind man can see? What if the greatest miracle in the story is that he followed Jesus along the road? You know, anytime you fix a problem, it's just a matter of time till another problem appears. You fix that problem, another problem appears. And Bartimaeus, he knows this, that if I follow Jesus through all of my problems, the resurrection matters because I have someone to follow through all of my problems. What problem do you have right now you can't solve and it won't go away, and you sort of flip-flop between what's wrong with me and what's wrong with you, God? The resurrection means that you can follow Jesus instead. Here's the third thing. My dreams can come true. 10 lepers stood at a distance crying out, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." He looked at them and said, "Go show yourselves to the priest." And as they went, they were cleansed of their leprosy. So a couple of weeks ago, I had a cold sore. I don't know if you ever get cold sores, but I had a cold sore. And I am always so amazed at how self-conscious I get when I have a cold sore. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't want to go out in public. I don't want any human contact at all. And the last thing I want is for someone to start talking to me about my cold sore, because I don't want anybody. I've been into my wife's makeup trying to get so you can't be seen. And why is it? I mean, someone always has to talk about it. How long you had that? What does it matter to you? And here's the great one. You know, I know how to get rid of that. I'm like, well, you'd be a millionaire, bud, if you did. I mean, you're thinking, don't they realize you don't want to talk about the cold sore, and especially in front of like public? And a cold sore is the size of a dime. Can you imagine if your entire body was riddled with a disease that made you ashamed to go out in public? Leprosy is a disease that needs no introduction. And these 10 guys have it. In Jesus' day, they would round you up. You had to be taken from your family and your friends and your home. You had to live in a small little community with everybody else that had leprosy. So your dreams die. All the things you think is going to happen in your future, they're all gone now because you have to live in a very small little area. They called them unclean. And if they dared venture out of their little colony and someone was approaching them on the road, they had to stop the person and warn them. They had to actually say, "Unclean, I'm unclean." So somebody else would avoid them. You ever feel that way? Like if somebody really knew who I was on the inside, they would avoid me. Or maybe you've done something and the word got out and you started to watch people just sort of avoid you. When I was in high school, my senior year, I got with a friend and got drunk. Primo Benini. Right in the middle of the day, we got drunk and I went to high school. I'm not proud of that, but that's what happened. And, you know, when you're drunk, you make the stupidest decisions. We're thinking, we're going to go to school. Nobody will know we're drunk. They busted us in like 90 seconds. You know, so I'm in the office, and I got suspended from school. And it was one of a string of really bad choices that I had made. And even though I was well-liked and I had lots of friends in that high school, the teachers and the coaches and different people started to view me differently. And one day, my friend comes to me, Primo Benini, and he says, "What did you do to Coach Wheeler?" I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, the other day he was giving us a ride home and you were walking home and he pointed you out and he said, see that kid over there? Stay away from that kid. That guy's a bad guy. And when he told me that, I on the inside, I was crushed. But on the outside, I was like, Coach Wheeler, whatever, man. But on the inside, I felt unclean. And I was like, are people going to start to avoid me? And you know, you feel your world get very small, and all of a sudden your dreams just sort of float away. What's going on the inside today? And these lepers, you know, they're great. They don't even try to defend themselves. They don't even say anything. I was like the biggest whiner ever. Well, my mom was an alcoholic, and I didn't have a dad, and we didn't have any money, and I had a bad house, and that's why. And here's the truth. I came to school like a knucklehead drunk. And the lepers, they just show up, and they go, here we are. They don't try to defend themselves. They don't try to say, here's what they're saying. It doesn't matter how I got here. I want my dream back. I'm saying the same thing to you today. It doesn't matter how it occurred. Whatever makes you feel unclean, it doesn't matter to Jesus. He'll give you your dream back. And in the story, it says that he looked at them. I don't know, maybe you've done something and it seems like people look away. And I want you to know something. Jesus will never look away. He will always look at you. And he heals them and they get their dream back. What dream have you lost because it's tied to something that you did and you're more focused on what you did? Today's the day to give it up. Today's the day to know that Jesus is looking at you. And he wants to give you your dream back. The resurrection matters because he's alive. Only alive people can look, and he's alive. Now, here's the bottom line, and look in your notes. Everyone is invited. And this is Jesus talking. Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in. Jesus is not going to kick your door down. He's not going to show up with a warrant for your arrest. He doesn't show up with the guns, and he just doesn't. He's willing to let you decide if you want to invite him in. He's knocking on the door, and the door is your heart. And the question is, would you be willing to open it? Nobody expected the resurrection to happen. It says that some women showed up and they had spices. They were going to prepare his body for the funeral. We've all been to funerals, and it's sad to be at a funeral, but it's shocking sometimes how good the person in the casket looks. You know, I mean, I'm sure when I die, I'm going to look a lot better than when I was alive. I'll be all dressed nice and shaved, and my hair will be combed, and I'll smell fantastic, and I'll be dead. Look at how good he looks. And then it dawns on you, ooh, that's kind of morbid. You know why they went with the spices? Because everybody thought Jesus was dead. He's not coming back. And yet, the resurrection matters because he's knocking on the door of your heart. Will you let him in?